Kyle Sieg, of course, this is the type of story tailor-made for TV news. Let's begin with you today. The images I saw looked pretty ugly. The road crews with DOT, though, say they do hope to have this fixed in short order.
Right, and it did end up getting fixed, and the roads were open, you know, later this morning. It was interesting because at the beginning, of course, we all wanted to see what this gap or whatever you want to call it in the roadway. They were very clear to say it was not a pothole. It was a void in the roadway. We were very interested to see what that looked like since it was delaying so many people. But as rush hour continued, you know, the traffic is actually really the compelling story and really what messed a lot of people up. So this morning, though, I think we're looking at two different things. One, the total cost, how much this will set the whole project behind, if at all, and how long it took to get it fixed. Obviously, we would think that weather had something to do with, you know, the kind of repeated delays because they kept updating and updating and pushing back the reopening.
Nate Monroe, this was original pavement, your newspaper, the TU, reports, going back to the 1960s that buckled. That's not a comforting thought.
No, but, you know, I guess one thing that is maybe a little bit more comforting is that it was set to be replaced. You know, it wasn't like the state was totally taken off guard that this piece of roadway was defective. You know, it wasn't a big surprise, but certainly collapsed, I guess, before ahead of schedule.
Yeah, right. And if you're just joining the program, share your thoughts about this week's traffic snarl and that collapse along I-95 with us here on the phones at 549-2937. John Burr, Fred Matthews. It sort of points up a problem that's not just local to Jacksonville, but nationwide. Our infrastructure is just crumbling all around us.
Well, you know, I think Mayor Brown had something to do with this. It goes back to when San Marco didn't quite go his way in the mayoral vote. And, you know, I think he...
It's all retaliation.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
He's listening, by the way.
There's a rat here somewhere. We're going to find it.
Oh, yes.
Well, this does fall into the national narrative on bridges and, of course, the other national narrative in New Jersey. But, you know, the good side of this is that it's fortunate that Jacksonville has received the funding to take care of its bridges the way that we've been able to do. I mean, we really depend upon our bridges to get where we need to go, and it's good that this discovery was made. It's bad that the delay was there, but in all honesty, I don't think it caused that much road rage among those who had to go there. And when you consider the fact that this construction is never going to end.
Yeah, yeah.
It is never going to end. We're going to see construction all the way to 20, they say 2020, but I know that Mike Goldman really means 2025 because it's always delays when they expand the Fuller Warren Bridge.
And that's controversial in and of itself, too.
Yeah.
That project, and we'll go to your calls in just a moment, discussing the top stories of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable, the number 549-2937. You mentioned GOP New Jersey Governor Chris Christie under fire for this thing that's been tagged Bridgegate. It appears his aides deliberately shut down the busiest bridge in the world, the George Washington Bridge, as some sort of act of political retribution. Governor Christie gave a two-hour news conference yesterday apologizing, taking responsibility for this. It's a big problem because nothing unites the political spectrum quite like traffic problems, I think it's fair to say. Kyle.
Well, sure. I mean, I guess you have, you know, Democrats doing, you know, what they would do in the instance of a Republican governor, and you have Republicans coming to his defense. And to Christie's, you know, nature, I guess, or it seems to be his nature, you know, he sat out and just answered all the questions. And you know, I'm sure that was probably good political posturing as well. But one of the more interesting reports I read as far as legal analysts talking about this was about how also, as much as he spoke, could hurt him in the long run, because now you have this class action lawsuit pending, and you have this investigation now into what went wrong, and now they have his account of things versus, you know, others' account of things as to who really is to blame for this.
Nate Monroe, your thoughts?
You know, a lot of the commentary, not surprisingly, has focused on, you know, how does this affect his 2016 aspirations? And, you know, a lot of the commentary has said it probably is going to be pretty damaging to that. One thing about the scandal that I think is very problematic for him is that it's very easy for people to understand. you know, this isn't some complicated derivatives issue or something where it's hard to follow.
Anyone can relate to being caught in traffic.
If your name's associated with bad traffic, I mean.
Right, not a good thing. John?
Well, one of the really stupid things about this, I mean, you know, if you've been across the George Washington Bridge, the traffic is bad all the time. So, you know, you don't have to put up cones to start a traffic jam on the George Washington Bridge. I mean, so what, you know, I don't know what they're trying to accomplish there. It's really kind of stupid.
Well, I mean, it's political mud is what it is. And the beauty about political mud is that it does wash off. The problem is it leaves stains. And if we've listened to the commentary, well, I don't think this is long-term a bad going to do him that well unless something else comes up in these memos that the Democrats in the New Jersey legislature are trying to rifle through right now. You know, it's all about getting the mud on him here. These two aides of his unwittingly or wittingly contributed to this process, and it goes to character in the political landscape. Is he a nice guy? Is he somebody we want to talk with? He's always bullying folks. And here we have this huge guy, contrite, voice down low, all of the things that they tell you in human relations training to do to keep people from getting excited.
He said, he actually said, I am not a bully.
Yeah, well, we saw the real Chris Christie when this first broke at the first press conference where he was berating reporters for asking him about, you know, was he involved with this at all. That's Chris Christie, and he is he is a swashbuckler, is what I would call him, and he's aggressive, and that's why he is the political leader he is, and that's why he's being considered for president of the United States. That does have a downside.
Let's go to your calls. Meanwhile, if you have thoughts about Bridgegate or our traffic mess here in Jacksonville this week, we want to hear from you at 549-2937. Charlotte in Avondale's on the line. Hi, Charlotte. Good morning.
Hey there. I would like to speak first to the comment that the gentleman made about the fact that he didn't think there was much road rage. That only speaks to the good behavior of Jacksonville residents.
Oh, yeah.
I was in it, and I was feeling a lot of anxiety, but I didn't act on it, and I think I was there with a lot of other people. So just because you didn't see somebody pull out a shotgun or ram into somebody else does not mean that we did not experience a lot of anxiety yesterday.
Oh, I'm sure.
And the second thing I will say, and then I'll listen to your comments off air, is that only pushed me over the edge that I'm going to move south of the Fuller Warren Bridge.
Oh, really?
And that's going to happen this year.
Oh, yeah, wow.
I deal with this bridge constantly. And yesterday, trying to get to a family member that needed me, I felt like I was trapped. I felt like somebody had turned the key, and I could not get to where I needed to go unless I left my car and walked away. And that just pushed me over the edge. I said, I will never, ever allow myself to be in that situation again if I can help it. So thankfully, I have the flexibility to move south of the bridge, and I'm going to. So there's my very civilized road rage, I guess.
Thank you, Charlotte. Sorry to hear that. That's Charlotte in Avondale. Wow.
Well, you know, I mean, I hope Charlotte never moves to Atlanta because this is what the traffic in Atlanta is like every day of the year. So,
well,
it's all relative, really.
It is, certainly. But that's not to say that it's not a frustrating situation when you're in it.
Well, no. The other reality, though, is that you're going to find construction wherever you are. Not only will you find traffic, but you'll find construction, particularly in Florida, particularly in Jacksonville. If you've ever driven up and down I-95 in Florida, I mean, there is always construction. You're going to get delays.
We've been insulated from what the rest of Florida deals with,
right.
I would say. Wouldn't you all agree? It's not as bad here as it can be in other
cities.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely. Orlando and Tampa and South Florida, and forget about it.
Anything that feeds into that perfect storm up there of I-10 overlapping 95 and, you know, it's still confusing. And add to that a road closure. You got to figure out whether you're going to the airport or whether you're going to the beaches or whether you're going downtown. You got about 3 or 4 lanes to get wherever you want to go, but maybe you're going to get on the wrong one. How do you get to Riverside?
Yeah. Well, Charlotte, just so you're aware, if you're still listening, realtor Phyllis Staines tweets the show. Tell that caller you know a good realtor to help her move south of the bridge. Another tweet. Remind everyone that the Florida move over law now includes yellow lights. I saw people not slowing down for the I-95 construction workers. So that's something to be aware of. Let's go to Bill in San Marco. Hi, Bill. Good morning.
Good morning. I would like to ask about the thoughts about lobbyists having so much control over our state and federal government and why that's not being restricted. Is it simply because of money? What's the comment?
Bill, thanks for the call.
Well, who's going to restrict it? The people who are getting the money in the legislature. So, you know, there's a conflict of interest, their own personal interest, not our interest, but their interest in restricting it.
Lots of calls, meanwhile, as the Media Roundtable here on First Coast Connect discusses the top stories of the week. The number to join the show, 549-2937, as we go to Ray in downtown Jacksonville. Hi, Ray.
Good morning. I wanted to talk about relating two of the stories. Just before you started this discussion, you reported about the legislature wants to cut license plate fees in half. And, you know, we're also talking about the infrastructure collapsing. It would seem to me we'd be far better off to take that $20 that it's going to make a difference to the average driver and put that into fixing the roads and bridges.
Ray, thanks for the comment.
Well, that would be a good thing to do, except that this isn't all Florida money. This is a lot of federal money involved here. In fact, this construction is going on right now at the I-95, I-10. That's a lot of federal grant money that's poured into this thing to make it work. The state of Florida would not be funding all of this activity. You can be assured of that. So the legislature is trying to find, and remember, we're coming up on an election year. We're coming up on an election year for the governor, who's full-throated behind cutting these license tag renewals, and it's going to happen. But it's different money that is funding the construction versus these tags, which basically goes to Florida.
Let's go to Peter in Jacksonville. He's on the line. Hi, Peter. Good morning. How are you doing?
Oh, fine, thanks. I wanted to comment on the New Jersey situation. One of your panels talked about character. I would like to talk about the character of the people that worked at the Port Authority, who, when they get a phone call from Christie's deputy chief of staff, think that it's a word down from God and act on it, instead of saying, no, we're not going to do that.
I'm sure it'll all come out in the investigation, Peter, but thanks for weighing in. Nate?
An interesting point about the Bridgegate situation is that, you know, some commentators have kind of pointed out that regardless of whether Chris Christie had a direct role in this, the question is, you know, was that the environment in his office? Is he responsible for creating an environment in which his top officials would feel like it was okay to retaliate and close a bridge?
Let's go to Karen in Ponte Vedra. She's got some comments about traffic. Hello, Karen. Good morning.
Hi there. Good morning. You know, I've lived in the area for over 20 years, and there's never not been construction on 95 here in Jacksonville. It's kind of a joke when my sisters come to visit me, because in 20 years, I don't think we ever remember a time when there wasn't cones and just a mess. It's really strange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear you, Karen, and I appreciate the call.
The only thing worse than all that construction would be not to have that construction. I mean, the fact is we got a lot more people here now driving cars than we did 20 years ago, and we need better roads or more efficient roads.
And lots of calls on this topic, but we do need to move on and discuss the other biggest headlines of the week here on our Friday Media Roundtable. If you're just tuning in, the number to join the show is 549-2937. And also making headlines this week, lawyers are in court at this hour arguing over whether Marissa Alexander's bond should be revoked. Prosecutors say the Jacksonville mother violated the terms of her release from prison. She was let out just before Thanksgiving last year. That's because Alexander's conviction on firing a shot at her abusive husband was thrown out, and she's waiting a new trial. This conviction has been high profile, the case itself controversial, because Marissa Alexander was initially sentenced to 20 years behind bars, even though nobody was injured in the incident. So we're waiting to see whether Circuit Judge James Daniel revokes her bond. We'll go to your calls on this in just a moment at 549-2937. Kyle Sieg, another high-profile case in the Duval County Courthouse.
Yeah, and this is going to keep being an issue until the actual trial. I am following our reporter who's in the courtroom on Twitter. It actually has begun. Right now, my understanding is the judge is talking to the counselor who supposedly gave Alexander permission to do these things despite the...
Through the pretrial services
yes,
program.
Yes, and the counselor is now talking to the judge, and the judge asked, you know, is there anything in my order that grants you the authority? And the counselor is saying that, you know, she thought everything that she... You know, she used her judgment and she thought what she granted was consistent with the judge's order and that she's never been questioned before. So that's what's happening right now. Like I said, I mean, this is just going to keep being an issue.
And meanwhile, the state's attorney's office is saying that Marissa Alexander didn't have permission to leave her home, that she disrespected the court by running a few errands, that it was outside boundaries set by the judge's order. Lawyers for the defense are calling this move out of the state attorney's office petty and vindictive. Fred Matthews, what do you think?
Well, I mean, that's really the story here is zealous prosecution when we don't really have a case. We're not in court yet. I mean, the case has been overturned. It's going back before the judge. There's going to be another plea offer made. It's either going to be accepted or turned down, and we're going to have a trial or we're not. I just, from the outside looking in, it just seems that the prosecution is just going after something to go after something. What's the end game here? The end game is that you want this young lady to stay in prison until you have a case. I mean, that's what you look at when you have this. And from the standpoint of the state attorney's office, as a citizen, you have to say, well, I hope I never get prosecuted by these folks because they're not going to give me a break. And that's the thing that you look at when you see this kind of overzealous activity going on about really nothing. Because for the average person that would be on probation or house arrest, they go to the probation office and ask if they can do it. They say yes or no, and you do it or you don't do it.
And our new reporter, Rima Thompson, is tweeting live from Judge Daniels' courtroom right now, saying that the officer is telling the court she believed that she had full authorization to give Marissa Alexander permission to leave her home. Alexander's attorney is saying that Marissa Alexander relied on that authorization seeking the places that she went. John Burr.
Well, I mean, what we know or seem to know is that Alexander sought the permission that she was supposed to seek. It was granted by the person who was supposed to make that decision to grant it or not. I'm at a loss to figure out what the big deal is here and why the prosecution is arguing to have her bail revoked. It seems I would agree with Fred. It just seems like it's an overreach.
And this case is, for those who haven't been following the case closely, Nate Monroe, it's become another nationally followed case for a variety of factors. There's a lot of nuance to the case, but it's caught the attention of the country because of Florida's mandatory minimum sentencing laws, 10-20 life.
Sure, and you know this case is one of those cases that brings up this discussion about mandatory minimum sentences. You know, it's been a hot topic for a long time. Is this the kind of case that mandatory minimum sentences were really supposed to have an effect on?
And there's a legislation now in Tallahassee, Fred, that's inspired by Marissa Alexander's story. It's called the Warning Shot Bill. And it would, I guess, decriminalize firing off a warning shot with your weapon if you contend that you're trying to ward someone off.
Well, I mean, these are amazing things for the legislature to take up. I mean, a warning shot bill? That's
ridiculous.
I mean, we don't get the police will tell you that they are trained not to do warning shots, which has been an issue in communities forever. Why did you shoot the person in the torso when you could have shot him in the leg? The policeman replies, we're not trained to shoot him in the leg. We're not trained to shoot to wound. Right. We shoot to kill. So, I mean, you can't. We can't continue to split this up. Either we like the law or we don't. And 20 years for shooting a bullet in the ceiling is unreasonable.
Yeah, this warning shot thing is silly. What happens, and it's going to happen, when the warning shot hits somebody right between the eyes and kills them, Are they going to say, well, I tried to do a warning shot? Yeah. You know, come on, give me a break.
Nate.
Yeah, I do just want to point out, you know, we're using the term warning shot. I mean, that is in dispute in this case. You know,
whether she was doing that.
Yeah, Alexander's defense attorneys claim it was a warning
shot.
And
the prosecutors say otherwise.
Yeah. And that's, you know, worth pointing out.
Yes, it is. And let's go to your calls on Marissa Alexander, 549-2937. Eric in St. Augustine. Hi, Eric. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you?
Great.
I have a couple comments. First of all, I don't think she should have been arrested in the first place. If her husband was a proven abusive husband, I guess she'd have been better off if she had just shot him and claimed stand her ground, and that would have been all right. The fact that I see her bail being revoked as a power play by the prosecutor's office to be able to put them in a better position because they know this is going to come down to a plea bargain, and it's a whole lot easier to get someone to agree to somebody if their butt is sitting in jail. And that's exactly what I think it comes down to. I don't think anything should be done to her, period.
That's Eric in St. Augustine. Eric, thanks for the call. Barbara in Atlantic Beach. Hi, Barbara. Good morning.
Good morning, y'all. I think the caller said something pretty close to where I'm thinking, but the key word here is overzealous. Why is the state attorney's office being overzealous? I think they're being overzealous because they've got something else. They've got another agenda. And I also think you think attorney general's office has gotten in trouble before, and going after this person, it just seems so easy, an easy target. Deflects attention to the other issues that they have going on. I mean, the counselor followed the guidelines. The defendant followed what the counselor recommended. This really should not be an issue unless there's a reason the attorney general's office is making an issue, and they're making an issue because they've got something going on. So I know that sounds like a pot to get a theory, but, I mean, you got two panelists saying pointing out that there's something wrong here, and I think overzealous is key here. Thanks.
That's Barbara out at the beaches. Thank you, Barbara. Let's take one more call. It's Tommy on the South Side. Hello, Tommy.
Hey, good morning. So my profession takes me to some of the more dangerous areas of Jacksonville, and I've had personal situations to where I've had to make it known that I have a means to protect myself to ward off aggressive behavior. So I'd be very supportive of the bill to be able to use non-lethal force. And the gentleman that talked about a warning shot and the police are in a different situation than just the general public, right? Because people will approach the general public in a much more aggressive manner than they will a police officer. So I can see to where a warning shot or being able to make people aware that you have the means to protect yourself could avoid, you know, the use of deadly force. But just my opinion.
All right, Tommy. Tommy, thanks for your call. Lots of calls on Marissa Alexander, but more news to discuss. If you're just joining us, the number to join the Media Roundtable is 549-2937. Let us know your thoughts on this issue. It's the campaign to legalize marijuana in Florida. Are you for it or against us? Call us up. Let us know where you stand. Now, next week, the campaigners will announce whether they've got enough signatures to get a proposed amendment on the ballot that would legalize medical marijuana in the state of Florida. If they can succeed in getting this on the ballot, it will go to all of us, the state's voters. 60% of Floridians would have to approve this for it to pass and become law. Orlando attorney John Morgan is spearheading this effort. We'll host him on the program next week, along with the Coalition for a Drug-Free Duval. But we want your calls on this, too. 549-2937. Kyle Siegel, the polling shows that overwhelmingly the state's voters would approve it, but it's still an open question as to whether it will make it onto the ballot in 2014.
And that's actually one of the more important issues, I think. I think a lot of people, at least that we've talked to, are talking about, you know, whether or not you agree with it, whether or not you disagree with it, at least let people in Florida vote on it, and then you have a clear understanding of where people stand rather than just having, you know, a poll. You have an understanding, you have a vote, and you know. And like we've talked about before on this show, I mean, it's really going to come down to, you know, perception and shaping the narrative. John Morgan has done so with, you know, talking about compassion and invoking religion and that sort of thing. And the other side does the same thing. I mean, that's what a lot of people are talking about. You know, at least let us vote.
Nate Monroe.
You know, legalization, even outside the context of you know, medical marijuana, but just outright legalization is something that's seen a big uptick in support in the last several years. Everyone knows by now. Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting that, you know, this is coming here to Florida. It'd be fascinating to see.
It will, because we've got a state attorney general, Pam Bondi, who Fred Matthews is very much opposed to this, and she will employ all legal means at her disposal to keep it from ever reaching the ballot.
Well, I mean, she's doing that. When the ballots or petitions reach the Secretary of State's office next week, and a couple of days after that, we'll see if they were able to make their quota. But the petitioners appear to be very confident they will make it. And, of course, the only other thing that would stand in the way would be the Florida Supreme Court ruling on the matter. That is going to be the final issue. But it averages, what, 10,000 signatures a county?
Right.
They have to reach. I would tend to think that even though they started late in this process, that they should be able to do that.
They say they're on target to make it. Yeah. John.
Well, this is all a bigger argument than medical marijuana. It's the old slippery slope argument, whereas, you know, the people who oppose this oppose it for a lot of them do anyway, that they feel this is step one toward total legalization of marijuana, and they don't want to go head down that road. And that's really what the issue is about. I don't think if there was some way we could absolutely restrict it to people who medically would benefit from marijuana, I think it would pass by 90%. But people are worried that, you know, hey, we're heading to Stonerville here, and they don't want to go there.
But, you know, the argument just gets checked by the fact that we have legal alcohol all over us. And when you look back at the activities that took place in 1920, I think there was a special that ran this week, and I didn't know this fact, but did you realize that the government took steps in 1920 to poison alcohol to prevent people from drinking it?
Mm.
I mean, the government took that step because they were lobbied by folks who didn't want demon rum to invade their households. So here we stand in 2013. We're arguing about a weed that has, quote, medicinal purposes to it. And it's also a generational argument we're involved in here now. Mm-hmm. And that's what's pulling us apart here, is that it's a generational issue. A lot of folks don't drink alcohol, but they do smoke the weed.
Hey, let's go to your calls on this. Where do you stand on the push to legalize medical marijuana in Florida? 549-2937. Gabriel in Jacksonville's on the line. Hi, Gabriel. Good morning.
Good morning. How y'all doing?
Great.
Just a couple of quick comments for the panel. One, obviously, it was already addressed, the slippery slope or gateway argument for the legalization of marijuana. I think that's, you know, fairly weak when you do have legalized alcohol and tobacco. And when you look back historically at the tobacco, alcohol, and even cotton industry influencing marijuana being illegal more for the monetary reasons of competition to the big money, deep pocket lobbyists historically, as opposed to any real health issue as to why it should be illegal. I think decriminalization is the only way reasonable to go. And I think the government, it's sad, has once again missed the boat on being able to make money and regulate this. And now it's become a private industry that's booming across our country and will continue to make money for private enterprise, as opposed to how the government could have regulated it and made money.
That's Gabriel. Gabriel, thanks for the call. Lots of calls on this topic. Carol in Mandarin. Hi, Carol. Good morning.
Good morning.
Your thoughts?
I just think medical marijuana should be legalized. I don't see why it's not. That's my only opinion.
Okay, Carol, let's take a few more calls. Daryl in St. Augustine. Hello, Daryl. How are things down your way? Good morning.
Oh, it's a beautiful morning down in Crescent Beach. just passing, just going over the 206 bridge. It's a beautiful Pelicans. You know, no traffic jams either.
that's nice.
Or potholes. The point I wanted to bring up about the medical marijuana, I think that Pam Bondi and the others are motivated by something other than the demon weed or the Stonerville. I think they're motivated by the fines, fees, and money that is generated through the courts and through the system by confiscation of cars. We caught you with a joint, so it's going to be, go to drug court and go to drug treatment, and all of that has money attached to it and fines and fees attached to it, and I think it's a revenue stream for the entire legal system, and they're not interested in losing that revenue.
That's Daryl down in St. Augustine. And Daryl, enjoy the lack of traffic problems down there, and thanks for the call.